Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. It's February 12th, 2024. It's Monday, so it's time for the Sunday review of the mainstream media. So I don't care about the Super Bowl. Selling the spell of goddamn bread and circus. I'm here to talk about the obscure truths that the misdirection and trick are leading us away from. So today in the news and the headlines, well, first of all, on Face the Nation this week, there wasn't much to report. It was all Democrats trying to run interference for Joe Biden. But my Senator Chris Murphy was on. He was one of the architects of the bipartisan border bill that tied Ukraine aid with border security, but he was on there trying to push more Ukraine aid funding and tell us that the electorate, well, tell the U.S. electorate that Joe Biden is fine and wonderful. And even more disturbingly, he tries to tell me, one of his constituents, not to be distracted with blatant illegality by the president that borders treason. That won't be prosecuted because he's too feeble. Come on, man. And I'll be tearing into the Sunday New York Times showing how the newspaper continually has mischaracterized the facts to mislead the public. So let's get into the news, shall we? Ah! All right, I'm going to try to make this work today. Not sure if it's going to work, but I'm going to try. I think I'm running too much RAM for this live stream. The first headline up from the New York Times is why the age issue is hurting Biden so much more than Trump. Both Donald Trump and President Biden are over 75, but voters are much more or less likely to worry that Mr. Trump is too old to serve. Well, most particularly because he's cognizant and he's cogent and he knows exactly what's happening around him. He's an older guy, sure, but he's certainly not feeble. I have to make a couple adjustments here, if you just bear with me. The thing with Trump is he is having a hard time. He's having a hard time fighting off the Democratic machine, even though Biden is clearly feeble. The Democrats are doing crowd control. Damage control, because Joe Biden, if you didn't know, the special counsel looking into his document handling, which was illegal, is saying he won't be prosecuted because he's too feeble. Well, if he's too feeble to serve as president, then he should be removed via the 25th Amendment. If he's not too feeble, then he should be charged for mishandling and sharing classified top secret documentation. So let's try to move on to the headlines here. Next headline up from the New York Times, Trump leads Biden in number of small donors. As you can see here from the graph in the New York Times, Trump has over $668,000 in small donors, while Biden only has $564,000. And I'm going to just read from the story here. Small donors have always been intrinsic to Mr. Trump's political momentum. Not only have they powered his three presidential bids, but they also have been a vital measure of his broad appeal to the movable grassroots base. Most large donors have so far kept their distance from Mr. Trump this cycle, but Mr. Biden, in contrast, has drawn ample support from big donors, obviously, because Biden is the puppet for corporatocracy, for the corporate fascism that has its firm grip around the neck of the United States. Just going back to the article here, I'm going to show the graph. More Trump small donors in battleground states, and then on the other column it has more Biden small donors, and they're all mostly liberal states for Biden: Colorado, New Jersey, Virginia, Illinois, Minnesota, Hawaii, New Mexico, Rhode Island, New York, Washington, California. And in the Trump column, swing states, battleground states, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Iowa, Michigan, Ohio, Missouri, Kentucky, Indiana, Georgia, Kansas, Florida, Nebraska, Utah, Arizona, Montana, Alaska, West Virginia, Tennessee, Nevada, Texas, South Carolina, Arkansas, South Dakota, North Dakota, Idaho, Oklahoma. Now you're moving in some red states. And back in the Biden column, Oregon, Connecticut, Maine, Delaware, Maryland, Massachusetts, Vermont, D.C., where Biden has the edge in small donors. Obviously, it's a blue and red state. There are no green states in there. So what you want to draw from that is the actual electorate, not corporations, support Trump for a variety of different reasons. The economy is one. You'll hear Chris Murphy a little later. I have a short segment from the Face the Nation interview with Chris Murphy. I'm not going to nauseate you with Chris Murphy going on and on and how wonderful supporting Ukraine is and how wonderful spending money is and how terrible MAGA is and all this. And how his electorate isn't going to be distracted by a partisan report by Mr. Herr, the special counsel, which says Joe Biden is feeble and that he indeed kept documents you shouldn't have had in the first place, basically stole documents, classified documents, kept them, mishandled them, and shared them. So all that's going on as well. So you'll hear from that briefly from here later, which just made me really mad because he's my senator, although I didn't vote for him. So moving on to the headlines here from the New York Times, a UN agency in Gaza fought Hamas infiltration not hard enough. Israel says the main UN agency in Gaza said it has long investigated claims of links firing several employees over the years. Israel said it was a compromised organization, too weak to protect itself. I tend to agree. The point of this story I'm going to get into in just a minute is the New York Times glosses over with a headline what we already know, which is the UN agency in Gaza has fought off infiltration from Hamas, which is a Islamic militant organization. But it doesn't talk about the headline that was sweeping late last week, which was Hamas had a command and control bunker in the tunnels underground UN facilities with obviously links up into the buildings of the UN facilities. And they have put command and control in tunnels, bunkers, and even in schools and hospitals, and some say into the UN buildings themselves to avoid attack from Israel. So let's just get into the article here. When the United Nations launched an investigation a decade ago into whether a handful of its employees in Gaza were members of Hamas, it was not long before a senior UN legal officer in the territory started receiving death threats. Before I go on, I just want to say that's neither here nor there. Whether a handful of employees in Gaza were members of Hamas, they're basically talking about whether or not some Hamas members, a handful, so they kind of disregard the fact that infiltration occurred or not. Infiltration is infiltration, whether it's a handful or a majority or whatever, but they try to downplay it by saying a handful. So the article goes on, the UNRWA, which is the aid organization for refugees, didn't go far enough to root out Hamas and was unwilling to clean up systematically. It said UNRWA is a completely compromised organization that is too weak to protect against infiltration and needs to be replaced by a more neutral aid group. Last month, Israel accused 12 UNRWA staff members of participating in the Hamas-led raid on Israel at the start of the war on October 7th. In the raid's aftermath, it also said that 1 in 10 UNRWA employees in Gaza are Hamas members. I mean, this isn't surprising. And the fact is they offered proof. So they showed a video of these members attacking Israel and then compared them to the records of employees at the UN agency. The story goes on to say, in Israel's view, the UNRWA should have been far more proactive in protecting its neutrality. Israelis have often said the group has done too little to stop Hamas from building military infrastructure close to its facilities or even using those facilities to store munitions. To bolster that argument, the Israel military this week led a group of international journalists, including two from the Times, to one of the many tunnels dug by Hamas underneath Gaza to house its military infrastructure and indeed underneath the UN facilities themselves. But you have to dig down in the article for the New York Times to even mention that, because this was in the 8th or 12th paragraph that they finally admit the headline that most of the other news organizations were going with, which was Hamas had military operations bunkers underneath UN buildings. And the story goes on to say, roughly 20 yards beneath an upscale neighborhood of Gaza, the tunnel ran in the southeasterly direction from under a UNRWA-run school. After passing under a major road, the tunnel eventually led to a subterranean communications hub full of servers and computer hardware that lay directly beneath URWA's sprawling headquarters in the territory. Well, that's the whole point. But they didn't lead with that headline or even put that in the lead. They had this 20 paragraphs down in the story that Israel accuses the UN of not protecting itself from infiltration. That's not the point. The point is that it's not only protect itself from infiltration, that they allowed Hamas to use the UN as a shield. So moving on to the next story here. Nine key revelations in Maui's first review of the Lahaina Inferno. Officials provide the first comprehensive look at where 100 victims of the August 8th wildfire were found. The actual headline in the newspaper was, Maui reports on Inferno reveals clusters of death. And I'm going to get to that in just a second, but I just want to say is that this is a continued cover-up, including here in the New York Times, that they don't talk about roads being blocked, the evacuation being blocked by downed trees, but it was actually police officers blocking the road. You'd be better off to let the people drive up to the blocked tree than close the road when a lot of people were burned in their cars and out on the street. And then the report goes on to say that the education department said no children died, whatever. So that's not true. So let's get back to the story. Many deaths on one street. One third of them were found along Kahua Street, a short road lined with residences on one side, about half a mile from the shore. That street has a dead end to the west, and the survivors have described how they struggled to escape to the east because a downed tree was blocking the roadway. Not, in fact, the police. The police were blocking the roadway. not a down tree. They didn't drive up to the tree. There were police turning people back, which was part of the problem. So people were trying to escape, and then they weren't allowed to escape. And then here, they have a picture of Kahua Street, and there was Front Street. That was the one by the water where also there was a small cluster where people died. But it shows where people died in the map. The story goes on about misinformation. The authorities found that many false claims were advanced on the internet in the wake of the fire, including inflated body count, which I believe in, inflated body count figures, because they're not addressing the reality of the scope of the amount of people died. They said 100. Suggestions that a mysterious beam of light had ignited the fire, and particularly prevalent conspiracy theory that Maui officials were downplaying or hiding the number of missing and killed children. So, they go on to say, among the deaths on Kahua Street, which was one of the biggest hubs, was the fire's youngest victim, 7-year-old Tony Takafua, who died with several family members. Many others also died on neighboring residential streets with little warning. And I just want to... What the fuck? Oh, sorry. I have to break here because what happened to that? I lost the other page. So there was another page that stated what the education department said, that none of the kids enrolled in school had died. So no children died. Not only that hundreds of children died, up to 400 or 500, no children died, according to the education department. But here we have a 7-year-old victim, Tony Takafua, apparently didn't go to school because he died, the youngest victim of the fire. But did he go to school? So they said no victims died. And I'm sorry, I don't have that page. So, I need to get to that page. Sorry about that. I guess, since I don't have that page, moving on to other stories here. The race is on to stop Ozempic muscle loss. Gym chains, nutrition startups, and drug makers all want to solve a common issue among people who take weight loss drugs. And if you don't know what's going on with Ozempic, supposedly it's a miracle drug that helps people lose weight, and that's all wonderful, but they've been increasingly a number of problems that people that take the drug, including stomach paralysis, which have ruined people's lives and caused deaths. And now we have another issue with Ozempic, which is muscle loss that wasn't previously reported. So some of the side effects now being listed, probably as black box warnings, muscle loss and stomach paralysis. So there's something what it does that it prohibits you absorbing, I guess, protein. So this is the problem now. It could cause stomach paralysis and now muscle loss that they can't seem to stop. So that's something to take into effect before you start taking this wonderful pharmaceutical. This is from the business section of the New York Times. Can this AI-powered search engine replace Google? It has for me, says the author. A startup called Perplexity shows what's possible for a search engine built from scratch with artificial intelligence. And this is the problem with this one. It goes on to say, at first glance, Perplexity's desktop interface looks a lot like Google's, a text box centered on a sparse landing page. But as soon as you start typing, the differences become obvious. When you ask a question, Perplexity doesn't give you a list of links. Instead, it scours the web for you. It scours the web for you. and uses AI to write a summary of what it finds. These answers are annotated with links to the sources the AI use, which also appear in a panel above the response. It scours the web for you. Oh, it scours the web for you. Now, is it scours the web for you, or it scours the web for you and uses AI to write a summary of what it finds? This doesn't sound good to me at all. I don't want AI to do stuff for me because it's like having someone else do something for you. It may have its own bias. It scours the web for you and writes a summary of what it finds. So you don't get the links and to figure it out yourself. It does it for you, which is the problem. Moving on to the opinion pages from Ross Do That. The question is not if Biden should step aside, it's how. Joe Biden should not be running for re-election, obviously. That much was obvious well before the special prosecutor's comment on the president's memory lapses inspired a burst of age-related angst. And Democrats who are furious at the prosecutor have to sense that it will become only more obvious as we move deeper into the actual campaign. What is less obvious is how Biden should get out of it. Now, of course, this is Ross Do That, a columnist for the New York Times. So he says, note that I did not say Biden should not be president, which he shouldn't be because he's obviously lost his mental faculties, excuse me. He points out the fact that the prosecutor's comments talked about his memory lapses, and then they went on to say that he shouldn't be charged because has the memory lapses. But then it leaves you to question whether he should be president at all. But now Ross Do That says, how should he get out of it? Which is the New York Times sentiment completely. Now, I don't really quote Maureen Dowd because I don't really like her, but she had an opinion piece. Mr. President ditched the stealth about health. And she goes on to write, But stealth about health is no longer possible. And the sooner President Biden's team stops being in denial about that, the better off Democrats will be. Jill Biden and his other advisors have come up with ways to obscure signs of senescence, from shorter news conferences to almost zero print interviews to TV interviews, mainly with fawning NBC anchors. But many Americans are quite concerned about the 81-year-old president's crepuscular mien. It's the elephant in the room, except that the elephants never forget. My problem with this, obviously, and I forgot the story. There was a story in the Times and I forgot to put it in there. I might have to dig it up. It was how the president's team was failing or was trying again. We've seen this article. Maybe that's why I didn't put it in. We've seen it again and again, how the aides and the administration and Biden's team constantly tries to keep him away from the cameras. It had the whole thing about how they had Biden climb the shorter stairs to Air Force One and having shorter news conferences. And it talks about how the aides are constantly screaming at the press, telling them you have to go now, only after a few questions, because they shoot him up with vitamin B and some sort of stimulant, obviously, and it only lasts a couple minutes. And after that, he starts to decline. So he's only supposed to keep the interviews to a couple minutes. And a lot of times, he doesn't really do that. So I forgot that article about the people close to Biden trying to keep him out of the limelight and trying to keep him away from interviews and trying to give him shorter stares and trying to, you know, they have to direct him off stage and they really need to coddle him. And I think I didn't call it up because we've already seen this article. We've already seen this type of these types of articles and these types of report of them, you know, treating Biden with kid gloves and allowing the media only to see certain parts of a Biden. Last opinion piece here, Trump's fever dream of immunity meets its match. This is Jamel Bowie, the resident racist at the New York Times opinion in the opinion pages of the New York Times. And he goes on to say, he will appeal the decision, and this talks about his immunity case that was ruled against his immunity case, and the case will almost certainly be taken up by the Supreme Court, where our eminent tribunal will decide whether the former president is immune from criminal prosecution for illegal acts done in office under the auspices of executive authority. And this is the point. Whether he's immune of criminal prosecution for illegal acts. Now, what are the illegal acts? Inciting insurrection, which he didn't do. So first of all, he should be immune from that because he didn't incite insurrection. But he should be immune from the fact or from the whole procedure. And presidents should be, for when they're in office and even after, but for the acts they commit in office, he could be removed from office, he could be impeached, and he could be tried for treason, but you can't start bringing criminal prosecution against presidents for this or that or other things they do, or murder for that matter, or anything like that if they launch a drone strike against a civilian or an American citizen abroad or what have you. It just shouldn't be done because then it has a chilling effect on the powers of the presidency, whether he can and cannot do things that later be held liable. It's the same thing with the immunity for police officers when they're doing their job. They should be immune from certain things so they're not chilled from actually performing law enforcement. The story goes on, he will appeal the decision, blah, 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 blah. Of course he will, whether he is immune from criminal prosecution, which he should be, for illegal acts done in the office under the auspices of executive authority, of course. But you have to deem whether those acts were illegal in the first place, which they weren't. It's the whole thing is a bit frivolous. So let's move on to Chris Murphy. And I'm just going to play this short piece from Face the Nation where he lauds President Biden. President Biden's wonderful and he's not having a problem at all. And that the fact that somebody in official capacity pointed this out, i.e. the special counsel, was just a partisan hack trying to endure himself with the MAGA base, which I don't think it was the case at all. If you know, was it Robert Hur? Was it Ben Hur? I think it's Robert Hur, the special counsel's name. So let's hear from Chris Murphy.
There's not a problem. This president is going to be able to sell a record
treason
that is extraordinary. unemployment at record lows, factory construction booming, crime down, inflation under control. And he is also somebody that has been the only one member of our party who has effectively beaten Donald Trump in a general election. So I know that he is ready for this campaign. I have seen how effective he has been up close and personal, and I'm not going to let my constituents be distracted by a special prosecutor who's trying to gain favor within the MAGA movement.
You idiot!
They cheat, but if I see tens of thousands of ballots being manipulated, I can't go along with that.
All right, so for me, don't forget to engage the channel, like, subscribe, share the podcast, leave a comment down below. Thanks for joining me today or sticking with me through this, figuring out this whole live stream thing. It seems to be going without any hangups today, so thanks for bearing with me. Let me know in the comments below if you like the new graphics or, you know, whatever. You like the new format. Trying to get it to work. In any case, that's it for me, Rudy's Revelation. Don't forget to like, subscribe, as I said. This Wednesday, I might not have a episode this Wednesday. I have some work to do. Special job, it might take me all afternoon, so I won't be home from early till late. And I got some other things going on as well. So, but stay tuned. Join me tomorrow. And then tomorrow, I think tomorrow night, we'll have a Tuesdays with Perry as well. We'll see. I'll try to get him on the line. So thanks for sticking with me, and I'll see you tomorrow.
This is a conspiracy.